And welcome everyone to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. I'm one of the founding fathers and senior faculty at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine. I've done a lot of work writing books, authoring things, researching the ethnobotany of Jamaica. And along with The Natural Nurse, we bring you this great radio, cutting edge radio. And she has the day off, but we are so excited to have on the radio here, Dr. Michael Murray. Dr. Murray, my professor, as I always say, is regarded as one of the world's leading authorities on natural medicine. He's a graduate and former faculty member and serves on the Board of Regents of Bastyr University, where he received his doctorate in naturopathic medicine in 1985. He's co-author of a myriad of books. Some of my favorites, The Textbook of Natural Medicine, Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, What the Drug Companies Won't Tell You and Your Doctor Doesn't Know, Encyclopedia of Healing Foods. And today we're going to be talking about The Longevity Matrix, his latest book. Dr. Murray, as a consultant to the natural product industry, has been instrumental in bringing many effective natural products to North America, including glucosamine, we've all heard of that, St. John's wort, ginkgo biloba extract, PGX, enterically coated peppermint oil, saw palmetto, and pharmagaba. It's a great pleasure and honor to have you on here, Dr. Murray.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Eugene. Anytime we get a chance to talk a bit or hang out, it's just a fantastic experience. So I'm pleased to be on your show again. It's been a while.
Yes. Last time I saw you, we were hanging out at a nice cafe in Connecticut, having a nice Thai salad. Last time you stepped forward, in this state at least. Anyway, it's great to have you on there. Thanks for getting up early to join us. And so, you know, I always remember back in school, always looking forward to your lectures. And one of the things that impressed me was one of the things that you said, if natural medicine works, it has to be scientific. There has to be rational reasons for why it works. And I think that's and that's why you call it rational medicine in the forward or the first part of your book. How is natural medicine rational? And is conventional medicine part rational and sometimes not rational? I guess both sides of the coin, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. If you break your leg, it needs to be fixed. And conventional right. medicine is pretty good at that. Where it fails is addressing some of these chronic health conditions. And they utilize biochemical band-aids in the form of drugs. But often these drugs not only cause side effects, but they actually worsen the disease process. And one of the great examples of that is if we look at one of the most common health conditions in North America, osteoarthritis, the most common form of arthritis caused by a degeneration of cartilage and other joint structures. The drugs, whether it's ibuprofen or aspirin or any other anti-inflammatory drug, what they're good at doing is reducing pain and inflammation, and they do so by blocking the action of certain enzymes. The problem is that these drugs also block enzymes that build cartilage and other joint structures. So when we utilize those drugs, we actually accelerate the progression of the disease process. The symptoms go away for a while, but the actual disease process is actually accelerated. And that's one reason why we have over 400,000 joint replacement surgeries each year in the United States, because people get hooked on these drugs because they're in pain and they're suffering and they want immediate relief. And there's just a better way to address this condition. And the naturopathic approach is to try and identify the underlying root cause of a health condition. And we don't get depressed because we're lacking Prozac. We don't get a headache because we need aspirin. And we don't have arthritis because there's a deficiency of ibuprofen or Advil or Motrin in our joints. So we try to build health, and we do that through diet, through lifestyle, and proper nutritional supplementation. And these approaches are very helpful in rebuilding the cartilage in the case of osteoarthritis, or overall health. And it's just a beautiful philosophy, and it's just a different way of looking at health and healing. It's more of a health focus versus a disease focus.
Yeah, and on the same token, we're not, we're not like substituting like St. John's Wort for an SSRI. That's not our approach either, because a lot of folks say, well, you know, you could just substitute something natural for that without really understanding the deep underlying pathophysiology of the condition. I find that naturopathic physicians, especially like folks I've trained, that's for sure, are, you know, some of the best at understanding biochemical pathways and the physiology of the body, and really get to sort of understand what's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, depression is a multifactorial condition, and we may want to utilize a natural antidepressant, whether it's St. John's Wort or saffron or dozens of other choices, as a short-term approach. But the long-term approach is trying to address some of the underlying causes of depression. And it could have a biochemical basis. It could have a psychological basis. It could have a social basis. It could have an emotional basis. So we try to treat the whole person and not get caught up in utilizing plants or natural products as a green form of allopathic medicine. It's a trap. But the best use of these natural products is part of a overall comprehensive health plan, a matrix. And that's kind of the basis of my latest book, The Longevity Matrix. A matrix refers to a constellation, a connection of interrelated systems. And that's what we are. We're a matrix of all these different aspects of our physiology and psychology. And we can utilize natural approaches to strengthen our weakest link, and as a result, improve the function of the whole matrix. And that's what I try to do in the Longevity Matrix, is take people through a tour of how their body works, and how diet, lifestyle, attitude, and the proper use of dietary supplements can really bolster our health and help us live a longer life. The subtitle is of the Longevity Matrix is how to live stronger, or how to live better, longer, and or stronger and longer. How to live better, stronger, and longer. If you take care of living better and living stronger, trying to improve the strength of every system in your body, the longer part is going to take care of itself. So this is a systems approach to health, and that's something that we learned about, isn't it? We learned that we're a system, and that we have to take a systems approach if we want to improve overall health.
Yeah, and you take the time to go through a lot of these interconnecting systems in your book, including looking at, of course, the gut, and then removing obstacles to cure, and getting your metabolic rate, you know, tying in the thyroid with the adrenals, with your metabolism, and then looking at the immune and heart. I mean, really, it's a whole, it's like holistic medicine 101. I love it. It's a good review of botanicals and physiology, and folks can learn a lot by reading your book, Dr. Murray. But you start with
Eugene, one of the things I always appreciated about you as a student and now as a doctor and kind of an elder spokesperson now of naturopathic medicine is I think we both share a childlike quality of being awed by nature, and that's what really fuels us. And like when you were talking, giving your introduction, when you were talking about, you just mentioned the ethnobotany of Jamaica, and I saw your face light up. I saw your spirit lifted. That sense of awe and appreciation for nature is what fuels a lot of what I do. And I know it does the same for you.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what keeps me You always learn that when you think you have it figured out, you're really a knucklehead.
Yeah, I've learned that in golf, Eugene. I've learned that in golf because every time I think I've got it figured out, I'll go out and shoot the worst round of my year, you know. So,
yeah, exactly. But, you know, you always what I loved about the book, I mean, many aspects, is that you start with our mind, the most powerful healing tool. You don't start with like the physiology of things. You start with the mind. How can I make this blank better?
Yeah.
How I am statements, getting leverage to change. Because, you know, you can throw a lot of facts on to people and then they get overwhelmed. Even our patients, it's sort of like I only give them a few things to do until I see them master it. And then I move on. You know, I got after school, I got my two black belts in different martial arts and still am active, although it did cause an injury, which we'll talk about a little bit. But anyway, I'm doing a lot better. But nonetheless, you know, the whole idea of a black belt is a white belt who never quit is an old saying that my school, my sensei and my master, Sabanim, which is the Korean for master, talks about a black belt is a white belt who never quit. So it's that never quitting, getting leverage on yourself, realizing that our body can heal no matter how old you are. So, you know, even if you're 60 reading your book, 70 or 40, there's information for everyone here.
Absolutely. And you mentioned removing obstacles to cure, and there are obstacles that people aren't aware of that impair their ability to live a long and healthy life. And I'll just give you one example, acetaminophen, Tylenol. This is a drug that should be taken off the market because it really cripples our physiology. It depletes our cells of a vital antioxidant called glutathione. And when our cells become deficient in glutathione, they're more susceptible to accelerated aging. And we see a long list of side effects with this drug. Maybe not the serious side effects that we know about these sorts of drugs like liver failure and kidney failure, but right. Insidiously, people will see the effects of acetaminophen and other drugs in their health, and especially as it relates to their cells' ability to maintain its youthfulness. And I just think it's a travesty that 50 million Americans use Tylenol, use acetaminophen on a weekly basis. And I think that's a huge obstacle to living a long and healthy life.
I remember Dr. Bill Mitchell saying when he was alive, when I was taking his classes, Advanced Botanicals, I remember it greatly. I took copious notes that I still look at when Dr. Mitchell, he would say that if aspirin were discovered today, it would be prescription and probably even outlawed because that also has damaging effects. These are thrown around like candy. You walk into any major drugstore. I mean, they're so accessible.
Yeah, and now we have drugs that have some pretty strong effects in one area, and that leads to strong effects in others. A good example are these proton pump inhibitors that are used for reflux and ulcers. These drugs are huge money makers for the drug industry and also the drug stores. Yet there are a classic example of a drug causing some short-term relief, but producing long-term consequences. These drugs have been linked to not only mineral imbalances and digestive disturbances, infections, increased risk of pneumonia, but also increased risk of heart disease, increased risk of certain forms of cancer, increased risk for Alzheimer's disease, increased risk for osteoporosis. So it just goes on and on and on. So that's one thing that I keep, it's a theme throughout the book is I'm trying to get people off of these obstacles to their long-term health. And fortunately, there are a lot of things that we have in natural medicine that offer great answers to improving the health of any of these systems that may not be functioning up to par, whether it's your digestive system, your detoxification system, your brain and nervous system, your heart, your liver. These are organs and systems that we can improve through nutrition and through the proper use of dietary supplements and herbal products. And in the book, I try to help guide people on how to use them, use these approaches in self-care. Not everybody has the access to a Dr. Z or a Dr. Murray, but they can learn and take charge of their health and learn how to live better, longer, and stronger.
Let's backtrack a little bit to the second chapter, which is the aging process itself. You know, we're all going to end up, you know, aging eventually, but I guess it's proper aging, or maybe there's a phrase that you used in the book that you referred it to. It's sort of like, I always tease my patients. I say, we want to end up in our elder years in a Rolls Royce versus a beat up jalopy. And George Burns said, who was a centenarian, he said, if I would have known I would have lived so long, I would have taken much better care of myself when I was younger. So that sets the stage for chapter two, keys to anti-aging and a longer life.
Yeah, we want to age gracefully in every way, right? Physically, mentally, emotionally, we want to age with grace. We can defy the aging process, but we can't avoid the long term. You know, eventually we're all going to age. Sometimes we age. People age, you know, fairly consistently and rapidly, and other times people are able to slow that down. But eventually, we all get to the same place. But like you said, you want to get there in a Rolls Royce or a beat up jalopy.
Exactly. So there are a lot of different theories of aging that, you know, it's funny because I teach anti-aging and geriatrics at UB, and we were talking about very similar things like, you know, telomere shortening. And there's some botanicals like extracts from astragalus that help with that. There's getting all the methyl groups cleaned off of your DNA. There's actually a test that, you know, sometimes I'll start a lecture and I'll say, who knows how their DNA is doing? And like no one raises their hands. I do. I said, yeah, because I run a test, which is 8-OH-DG, which is looking at 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine, damaged DNA. Everyone should have their hand up and know how much damage their DNA has. They should know how much heavy metals are in their body. I'll say, how many people know how much mercury you're carrying in your body? No one looks around. I said, see a naturopath and you'll know these powerful hallmarks or benchmarks of aging. So there's a lot of benchmarks. You even spend a lot of time in the book talking about the dangers of sugar and having a high sugar in the body, glycation.
Yeah, it's there are certain things that accelerate the aging process, and faulty blood sugar control is in America is probably one of the biggest contributors to accelerated aging. You brought something up that really drives a point home. Dr. Pizzorno and I both agree that the biggest threat to human health isn't some super virus, and I know that sounds silly to say given this pandemic that we've had. The greatest threat, long-term threat to human health, is this ever-increasing environmental load of toxic compounds that are not only poisoning our environment, but they're greatly influencing our health. And you know, diabetes is a great example. The standard thought about why people develop diabetes is obesity leads to insulin resistance, and that leads to elevated blood sugar levels and diabetes. But when they looked at data from the National Nutrition and Health Survey, and what they found was that if someone could be obese, but if they had a low load of environmental toxins, they didn't get type 2 diabetes. On the flip side, if somebody was thin and they had a high load of environmental toxins, they had a 20 times greater risk of developing type 2 diabetes than someone who was morbidly obese. So we need to rethink some of these dogmatic principles in medicine and look at things a little more holistically. And the ability to detoxify, I think, is one of the key factors that we can influence through diet, lifestyle, and proper supplementation. And I think those influences can help us not only improve our detoxification system, but live longer and prevent some of these chronic degenerative diseases. We know that Alzheimer's disease is linked to type 2 diabetes. It's also linked to increased load of these environmental toxins, same as Parkinson's disease and many other diseases of aging. So, I focus a lot on some principles of promoting detoxification. In the book, I also focused a lot on the evils of sugar, because that's what people have to realize. They have to realize that if they don't eat in a way that helps control blood sugar levels, it's going to lead to accelerated aging.
And that changes as you get older. You know, like as a kid, you might have the vital force, the reserve to deal with those types of things. But as you get older, if you keep eating, and I've learned that myself the hard way, if you keep eating like you're 21, it doesn't work out too well when you're 60 or so, you know? So you have to change and evolve with, you know, your body and its needs.
Yeah, and the basic principles of nutrition apply for every age. Mm. And in youth, we're focusing on development. As we get older, we have to focus more on preservation. How can we eat in a manner that's going to preserve our mental function? How are we going to preserve our muscle mass? How are we going to preserve our vital energy? These are things that we need to focus on. And the dietary composition is very similar, but the benefits and the focus has to change a bit.
You have a lot of dietary strategies to fight aging. I love some of your suggestions. One thing that's great about your book is it's full of practical suggestions on how to like live the medicine. Like, Dr. Mitchell used to say that, you know, naturopathic medicine, you live it. It's not like something you go home and after 8 hours, you're punch out and you're done. It's like you continue to live this way, and that's very interesting about our profession, you know, and our field.
It is, and one of my favorite parables in life is the parable of the blind men and the elephant. Most people have heard of it. Seven blind men were given the opportunity to examine an elephant, and they all were directed to a certain part of the elephant. So that's the part that they knew. And so they were arguing amongst themselves what an elephant was like. One said, one had its tail and said, no, it's the elephant's like a strong rope. And then another grabbed its leg and said, no, it's like a giant trunk of a strong trunk of a tree. Another grabbed its side, said, no, it's like the wall. So you get the idea. They all had different ideas on what an elephant is. And what we have to realize is that an elephant is all of those things. And our body works best when we look at all those different components that make us who we are. And so I always get asked the question, I'm sure you do as well, what's the most important part? What's the most important area I need to focus on? Well, the area that's broken is always a good response, but you know, it's kind of like your car. What's the most important part of your car? Well, in order for that car to run properly, it needs a lot of different things, right? It needs four functioning tires. It needs an engine that'll start. It needs gas. It needs oil, unless it's an electric car, I guess. But, right. You know, you get the point is that you need all of these things. So everything works as part of a system. And so good physicians are skilled at discovering what might affect the system the most, and addressing that first. And so I've tried to help people in the book identify what might be the key area of focus to put everything in place. Because the great thing about a system is when you fix the key thing that's not working properly, everything gets better. The book takes people on a tour of their body systems through a series of self questionnaires, and based upon their results, they'll be given certain suggestions. And it's amazing. And I know you've seen this in your practice. Sometimes you'll address one thing in a patient, and it fixes everything. Right. And it's usually the simplest thing. I had this patient once, and this guy, he was involved in an automobile accident, and he had some hip pain, and he had the most severe psoriasis that I'd ever seen. And he'd been under all this stress, and his diet wasn't very, very clean, and he was eating a lot of salty foods. And I put him on a low salt diet, and I supplemented with potassium chloride, a salt substitute, because potassium chloride, the potassium based salt substitutes, you can use easily in adding to your food and increase your potassium levels. So we increased his potassium levels. His severe sciatica and hip pain went away, and his psoriasis, for the first time in his life, completely went away just by making a few dietary changes and boosting his potassium levels. But, you know, and it really got me thinking, sometimes we forget the most obvious things with how our cells work and how we can help that cell work properly. If we took a cellular approach to health, and we asked the question, what is this person not getting that cell, every cell in his body really needs? And every cell in the body, the human body, needs a lot of potassium. And so that's what happened there. And we see the same thing sometimes with magnesium or a certain vitamin. It just helps everything, that all that machinery in a cell work better, and that transcends to every cell in the body. And when you help one cell, you're addressing some things that are going to help others. And that's the whole concept. And,
you know, kind of like what Dr. Lust said, you know, the founder of naturopathic medicine, you know, build, our job is to make that blood perfect, to get a perfect amount of minerals, nutrients, vitamins. And even in Chinese medicine, when they say you have weak blood, they're not only talking about iron. That's what most lay people think. We're talking about amino acids. We're talking about organic acids. We're talking about micronutrients, phytochemicals, all those things. Try to bring in pH, bring that into balance, and then deliver that blood to the cells. And usually the body takes care of itself, the vis, the wisdom, the power. Takes care of itself. That's kind of naturopathic philosophy 101, as I remember it from Dr. Pizzorno and those guys that taught me.
Yeah, very well stated, Eugene. And you've always had that skill to put the pieces of the puzzle together and really get it. Sometimes we'd see this with patients, right? We'd ask them to bring in all their supplements, and they'll come in and they'll bring, you know, two big grocery bags of all the different supplements they're taking. And we'll look at it and we'll see that they're, even though they're taking all these things, they're missing some of the foundational aspects. For women, a lot of times it's iron, especially, you know, we're seeing more and more women eat vegan, and that's great for a lot of reasons, but there's some challenges in getting adequate protein, adequate B12, and iron. And if you look at the consequences of iron deficiency, most physicians, they'll look at the patient's hematocrit or maybe serum iron or hemoglobin, but they don't do a test called serum ferritin, which tells us our body's iron stores. And it's a simple solution to a complex constellation of symptoms. Low iron status prior to anemia. Anemia is the end stage of iron deficiency, but we have deficiency of iron causing all sorts of symptoms prior to anemia appearing. And these symptoms may include fatigue, you know, lack of physical and mental energy, depression, can make, you know, restless leg syndrome, poor sleep quality, can lead to excessive menstrual blood loss, hormonal imbalances. So we see all these consequences of iron deficiency, and having the patient eat more iron-rich foods or taking an iron supplement to raise their serum ferritin can produce such dramatic improvements. And you talked about knowing what your DNA damage status is and how important that can be. I think women of childbearing age, women who have menstrual cycles, they're losing blood. If they're not getting enough iron in their diet, they're likely going to be iron deficiency. They should get a serum ferritin test at least once a year just to make sure that they're not iron deficient, because it's amazing to me how common this deficiency is. It's the most common nutrient deficiency in the world still. Yeah, and it's something that that can be easily fixed. Hair loss in women. A lot of the patients that I had that were females, when they got into their 30s, 40s, 50s, they'd come in to see me because their hair was thinning. Their nails were weak and brittle. And, better nutrition made huge improvements. But what I found was that iron deficiency was a big factor. Cold hands and cold feet. We think a lot of times about thyroid, but in women, it's low iron status is the biggest cause.
What about the age old saying, you are what you absorb? I mean, that's one of those aphorisms in naturopathic medicine. I know one thing I liked about your book is, I learned about the alginate fiber raft for a GERD. I had read about it, but forgot about it. You brought it right back into the seat of my consciousness, and I've actually recommended it for several patients with GERD. Talk a little bit about why we see this epidemic of digestive problems and why, and how that leads to a weakening of the vital force and eventually shortening of your life, because you are what you absorb, right?
Yeah, very much so. Hippocrates, we give him a lot of credit for some great quotes. And one of them is that all health begins in the gut. He also said all disease begins in the gut. So we now know how important gut function is to all of our body systems, the mind-body connection. We know that the health of the gut plays a huge role in the status of our the inflammation in our body, which can accelerate cellular damage and aging. Yeah, so there's an epidemic of GI disorders, and I think a lot of it has to do with the medical treatment of GI disorders and the over prescription of these proton pump inhibitors and other very strong drugs to block the secretion of hydrochloric acid. It doesn't have to be that way. We can utilize safe and effective natural therapies. And you brought up a beautiful one. Gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD as it's known, is just it's it's a near epidemic, and mm-hmm. there are certain factors. I have people go to my website, drmurray.com, mm-hmm. and they go to the resources section. I have a free booklet on GERD. I put it out for free because I want people to get off of these drugs. Right. And I talk about this alginate raft therapy. Alginate raft therapy is a huge treatment in many parts of the world. The number one prescribed drug, I say drug in quotes, in the UK for GERD is not a proton pump inhibitor like Zantac like Prilosec or Nexium, or an older drug like Zantac or Pepcid. It's an alginate raft therapy. And alginate is this fibrous compound from seaweed. And what it does is when you take it after a meal, it floats on top of the stomach contents to form a barrier that prevents the reflux into the esophagus. So it's a mechanical effect, and the benefits are almost immediate, within 30 seconds, and it can last for 4 or 5 hours. It's a safe and effective treatment. It is natural. And it has no side effects, so it's perfect, right? And I think we got to make it more popular because it's something that really works.
You know why? Because when people are weaning down on these, the problem is they come in and they're on these things, and then we have to spend a couple months to wean down the doses. There's going to be a homeostatic reaction where you're going to produce more acid, and then maybe you can talk about the pH and achlorhydria thing too. That would be an interesting aside to talk about. But the idea is that you have to then, get the homeostasis right, and that takes a little bit of time because they've been suppressed for so long on these drugs. And I find that the alginate, I explained it to my patient, it's like getting a new head gasket in the car. it's like it stops.
It works great. And sometimes we have to tape, it's best if someone's been on a PPI for over a year. In the book, I gave the standard tapering down dosage. You basically just cut the dose in half for 2 weeks. And then after that, you either cut it in half again or you take it every other day. But the great thing about this mechanical treatment is that people get relief,
right?
And it's something that really does work, and it has 17 double blind placebo controlled studies. It has head to head studies comparing it to these proton pump inhibitors, and it outperforms them. So it's a better treatment. I really think that the future of medicine will utilize these safer and sometimes more effective natural approaches. I think that when historians look back at the last 100 years of medicine, they're going to say, what were those doctors thinking? Because this is really the dark ages of pharmacology. We think that these drugs are at the top of their sophistication. But the reality is that many of these drugs are simply being used as, pacifiers of symptoms, and they create lifelong patients. And PPIs are a good example. Benzodiazepines, a set of hypnotic drugs for sleep and anxiety and insomnia, they're another example, because when people want to get off of them, they get this rebound effect. And right. They create a dependence. We know the problems that were caused with the opioid addictions. What people don't realize are these subtler dependencies that have been created on a long list of other drugs, and PPIs for GERD and ulcers, and benzodiazepines for anxiety, insomnia.
And how about the biologics? The biological response modifiers. I mean, every day I watch a show on TV, there's a new biological response modifier, something to block tumor necrosis factor alpha or one of the other enzymes. I mean, they're sort of, so they're blocking inflammation upstream, but they're not looking as to why the patient is inflamed.
And you know, I mentioned gut health. The leaky gut is a real entity, and this physiology and anatomy that we have throughout our body is just it's so awe-inspiring. And the lining of our intestinal tract is only one cell layer thick, so it's very fragile. And when that area is damaged, if we spread it out, it'd be about the size of a tennis court. But if there's just a little damage to that surface, then we start absorbing compounds that are not designed to be absorbed into our body, and they cause problems. They suppress the immune system. They activate inflammation. They disrupt cellular processes. They cause disease. And so there's many causes of inflammation, but in many instances, it really begins in the gut.
Yeah, so and then the flora is very important. You mentioned an interesting new guy on the block. What is it, Akkermansia?
Yeah, Akkermansia mucinophilia. I have
Like we
kind of
just learned
a
about, lactobacillus and bifidus when we were in school, but things have really, the gut microbiome has really evolved with many different
Yeah,
subspecies.
we focused on those lactic acid bacteria like Lactobacillus acidophilus and Bifidobacteria because that's what can be produced commercially. But our gut is an anaerobic environment, meaning that it doesn't have oxygen. And so some of these bacteria that we thought were important really aren't that important. And one of the most important bacteria in our gut is one known as Akkermansia mucinophilia. And this organism works with our intestinal cells to create that mucin lining that acts as a barrier to damage and helps protect that intestinal cell. And low levels of Akkermansia mucinophilia are associated with not only inflammation, but also an increased risk for type 2 diabetes and all of its consequences. It's really kind of a new frontier of probiotic therapy. And the interesting thing is that the heat-killed version is more effective than the live. So it turns out that the active components are is this protein that's in the exoskeleton of the bacteria. And when you heat kill the organism, it exposes that protein, making it that preparation more effective. And it's probably going to be developed as a drug, this particular protein. But there are ways we can improve or increase the amount of Akkermansia mucinophilia in our intestinal tract. And lo and behold, it's basically all the good foods that we've heard about over the years help grow Akkermansia mucinophilia, and all the junk food and unhealthy food impair it. Gluten, for example, is kind of a toxin for Akkermansia. And so some of the negative effects of gluten, as well as glyphosate, which is another toxin to Akkermansia, that may be a big factor in why those compounds really disrupt gut function. But some of the things that can help grow this organism in our gut, the fish oils, long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, monounsaturated fats that we get from olive oil, and plant polyphenols and volatile compounds. So, I think herbs and spices are gifts from nature. Think of them as concentrated forms of food, and we need to spice up our diets. We need to liberally use herbs and spices because of the compounds that they provide. And Eugene,
Like that.
I'm primarily a medical researcher, and one area that I have looked at that just is fascinating is what they're doing with animal feed to try and reduce the dependency on antibiotics and hormones to help animals grow better, faster, and higher nutritional content. And what they're using are volatile oil-containing plants, cinnamon, oregano, sage, with great effect. And we need to take advantage of, you know, all these peppermint family vegetables and herbs and spices. And we need to add more of these polyphenols, particularly the flavonoids. I'm a big fan of flavonoids. If you read my book, you see that over and over and over. You used a term earlier, biological response modifier. Well, flavonoids are classified as biological response modifiers. These are the compounds that are responsible for the colors of many fruit and vegetables. They're also the compounds responsible for many of the medicinal effects of herbs and spices and medicinal foods, whether it's chocolate, whether we're talking about blueberries or pomegranate or asahi or legumes. It's the flavonoids that are really responsible for these benefits. And they're given that term biological response modifier because they modify our response to the environment and biological factors. And this is evident by their antioxidant, anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, anti-aging, and other effects. They truly are, you know, my favorite class of compounds in nature because they're so varied. And we're learning that there's over 8,000 different flavonoids that have been classified, and they each have different effects. And so, for example, there's this flavonoid found in tangerine peels, nobelotin. They looked at, they screened over 5,600 chemicals to look, they're trying to find something that works on our cellular clock. We have a biological clock in our body, and it's not just located in our brain. Every cell in our body has this mechanism, this biological clock. And the most powerful influencer of helping reset and tune up that clock is this flavonoid compound found in tangerine peel and other citrus fruits. So I think that's going to be really big. But, you know, a lot of our popular natural products are a part of these flavonoid classes of compounds or polyphenols. You know, the benefits of green tea, the benefits of curcumin and turmeric, the benefits of ginger, the benefits of ginkgo and St. John's wort and milk thistle extract, and many, many herbal extracts are due to their flavonoid components. And different flavonoids have an affinity for different body tissues and different enzyme systems. And what's amazing to me is time and time again, the deposition pattern of these flavonoids, and we know that based on radio labeling them and giving them to animals, they mirror their historical uses. So bilberry has been used to improve night vision and eye function. Bilberry extracts have been shown, if they radio label them, to be concentrated in the pigmented layers of the retina associated with improved night vision. We know that milk thistle extracts long been used in treating liver conditions. You radio label the active flavonoid components, they get concentrated in the liver. Grapeseed extract, great for the vascular system in the lungs. I can go on and on and on. Ginkgo and these flavonoids have.
Where does chocolate?
Oh my God.
Because I know you love chocolate and you're.
Oh my God. This is, Eugene, this is, yeah, I love chocolate. And here's the, oh my God, I got chills through my body because I'm so excited to tell this to people. We made some comments that were related to the microbiome, this collection of organisms that live within us. We have more microbial cells in our intestinal tract than we have human cells in our body, over 10 times greater microbial cells. So the composition of our microbiome is critical to our health. So here's what they found. These cocoa flavanols, they're very active on our vasculature. So they've been shown to improve blood flow, and particularly improve blood flow to the brain, improve cognition and memory in elderly folks. They have a lot of great effects on the vascular system. So they looked at 9 metabolites of these flavonoids, gut-derived metabolites. The metabolites were up to 10 times more powerful than what we thought were the active components. So the type of bacteria that we have in our gut will determine how these compounds in chocolate are metabolized and whether or not they are converted to inactive forms or highly active forms. And the great thing is that a higher flavonoid intake leads to a more favorable microbiome. So the more flavonoids that you get in your diet, the better the conversion to these beneficial compounds. So where do we get flavonoids? We get it not only from, people always think of berries, but also legumes, beans. Beans are very high in flavonoids. Red kidney beans have a higher antioxidant activity compared to blueberries because the flavonoid content is actually higher. Beans, richly colored fruit, particularly berries, citrus fruit, great sources of flavonoids.
I know pomegranate's a big flavonoid that I've read about quite often. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, and you know, again, pomegranate has phenomenal effects on the vasculature. There are a lot of commonalities between these different groups of flavonoids, like green tea. You know, drinking green tea or rooibos or any richly colored fruit and vegetable tends to be high in flavonoids, and again they have different effects on our system, and we want to have the greatest protection. And the way to do that is to eat a varied diet rich in colorful plant foods, a rainbow diet. If what we've learned about the microbiome is we've learned a lot from looking at different microbiome profiles based upon overall diet. And what we see with the Mediterranean diet, for example, is a more favorable microbiome. And they've tried to dissect it and determine, well, what is it in the Mediterranean diet that leads to this favorable microbiome? And you know what it is? It's the fact that it's varied. It's not one thing.
Everything.
What we know about the microbiome is diversity is really important. You have to have the right bacteria, but it has to be diverse. And the key to having a diverse microbiome is having a diverse diet. Mix it up in terms of what fruits and vegetables and plant foods that you consume, because that's our biggest source of beneficial compounds. What's happening to our food supply? Because it's becoming more and more limited to maybe 14 major crops. And We can't let that happen. We have to value all these different types of foods and really take advantage of them while we can.
Well, in the last few minutes of the show, I don't want to diss our brain, because a lot of times, you know, we can arrive at old age but not have the marbles to even appreciate. Yeah. And then every day is like Groundhog Day for some people, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah.
So my wife, she works, you met my wife at dinner. She works in the geriatric field, and she's looking for any good things to help with brain function for her clients and patients. And I know in the Longevity Matrix, your book that we're talking about today, you talked a lot about the brain. So we have about 4 minutes left in the program.
Yeah, you've got to love your brain. That means you've got to do everything you can to protect it from the aging process and give it the vital nutrients and support that it needs. And our brain needs, it's the most biologically and biochemically active part of our body. And it needs oxygen, it needs glucose, it needs proper regulation of blood sugar levels. It needs a constant, steady stream of high-quality nutrition. It needs the right types of fat in your diet. You need those long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. You also need those monounsaturated fats you get from olive oil, avocados, nuts and seeds, and their oils. You also need to have all those B vitamins. They did these studies at Oxford, Eugene. They first showed that B vitamins prevented gray mass atrophy as we age. And that's where our gray matter is what we need for our brains to function properly. They found that B vitamins worked in reducing gray matter loss, but only if omega-3 fatty acids were sufficient. The more you had an optimal intake of both, the greater the gray mass. So we need all of these nutrients. We need the right types of fats. We need sufficient protein. We need to make sure our brain's hydrated. We need to flood it with all the essential nutrients, vitamins, and minerals. And then there are special compounds. We talk about curcumin. UCLA did a study with theracurmin, an active enhanced form of curcumin, at 180 milligrams per day. It stopped the process of brain degeneration associated with Alzheimer's disease, and it led to significant improvements in mental function, and we see improved health of those areas that are targeted in Alzheimer's disease. So there's things that we can do with supplementation in our diet that can really help our brains service well in old age. When I started learning about Alzheimer's disease in pathology, you know, back in the 80s, early 80s, Alzheimer's disease, it affected about 1.5 to 2% of people over the age of 80. Now, the projection is by 2030, it's going to affect about 50% of people over 80. So, I think environmental toxins are a big reason for that. So it kind of all goes back to some of the basic things that we were talking about.
Well, thanks so much for writing this great book. I mean, this is just scratching the surface of all the amazing things that we could pick from your book there, including your own, what you think is important to really take. So we'll leave people a little bit of a teaser to go get the book so they can look at what Dr. Murray takes, because that's important, being one of the world's leading researchers and one of the most well-read guys I know as far as nutrition. So thanks so much for being a guest, and we'll have to do it again because you have other books that we never even have, like The Magic of Food. So we'll be in touch again, and we'll have you on to talk about some of these.
Eugene, I want to leave one comment before we sign off, and that is they've looked at all sorts of different factors that determine a person's ability to live a long and healthy life. And the expression of gratitude is the most important aspect. And the quality of our relationships is a close second. So I want to thank you for having me on here. And I want to thank you for being a supportive friend for a lifetime. I really appreciate
it. It's true. Thank you so much. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Wishing everyone the best and to stay healthy. Bye-bye.